Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's head to the phone lines right now to be joined by Matt Verderam of Sports Illustrated. Let's get back to Chiefs. Let's get back to Broncos in a very important divisional game. Matt, how you doing, my man?
Doing well. How are you?
Doing fantastic, man. Happy to have you pop on today, man. Let's just start with this. A couple of teams I want to get your opinion on, I want to get your thoughts on, and I want to ask your opinion on if you believe in these teams or not. Let's start with the Indianapolis Colts. Are you a believer or a non-believer?
I'm a believer that they're a legitimately good team. I have my hesitations about the idea that that team's going to win the Super Bowl. I think the last 2 weeks we've seen Daniel Jones turn the ball over and over. I think 7 times, and he's even had like 2 or 3 other fumbles that he's had recovered. But I think they are a team capable of a playoff win, something like that. I don't think they're going to end up in Santa Clara.
Let's keep things moving with this. Let's go to the Denver Broncos. Are you a believer or a non-believer in what the Broncos have done so far this season?
I believe in them far less. Look, I got to be honest. I think Denver's the same thing they were a year ago. Like, I don't think Denver's wildly better than they were last season. They're very, very reminiscent of that group. They're great defensively, and you're lying if you don't feel that way. I mean, they might break the all-time single-season record for sacks. But offensively, you know, the whole country seemed to tune into that game Thursday night and we're like, wow, Denver. Like, Denver's terrible on offense. Like, yeah, this is what Denver looks like every week on offense. Denver's had 2 good offensive performances this year for a full game, not just like 1 quarter. And they're against Dallas and Cincinnati, who are legitimately 2 of the worst defenses in recent history and are the 2 worst defenses this season.
Last team I want to get your thoughts on after going through those first 2 teams is the New England Patriots. Are you a believer in the Patriots?
More so than I think New England's going to win that division. I think New England can make a real push. Now, the question with New England becomes, can the Pats beat really good teams, you know, 2 or 3 weeks in a row in the playoffs? Maybe. Look, they've beaten the Bills. They've beaten the Bucs. They've done it on the road. I believe in them more than I believe in any of these other teams.
Right now, we're talking to Matt Verderam of Sports Illustrated here, going through some of the top stories right now in the National Football League. Matt, why do you think that Nick Sirianni went for it on 4th down? Because I've been trying to figure this out for quite some time. Like, I really have. I've been trying to figure this out, and I don't have a good answer at all. Like, I really don't have a good answer on why they went for it.
I covered that game last night. I was in Green Bay, and I have no good answer for you. I don't know that anybody does. I don't think there was one human being in the press box who could figure out why they did what they did. Look, that game was terrible offensively. I can't remember watching a game in person that was that bad offensively. And part of it, yes, defensively, he's played well, but there was – I mean, I had a pretty good view of that whole game, you know, the all-22 type view, and – there were guys open that game, and the quarterbacks just couldn't hit him or didn't see him. Especially, I felt like as the game went on, I felt Hurts really like they could have moved the ball. It feels like Philadelphia plays terrified of Hurts, and I don't know why. It's very strange. Like, they shouldn't be scared of him, but they are. Like, they treat him like he's not good. But then in the biggest moment of the game, like, why you don't punt the ball there? I have no clue. I wish I had a better answer. I have no idea. I almost wonder if they thought they were like a 4 or something. But it was very strange.
Yeah, I was trying to wonder if Nick Sirianni is just somebody who just thinks he's smarter than everybody else, which sometimes is not a bad quality to have. But in this scenario, I mean, whenever ESPN analytics are telling you to punt the ball and you don't listen to them, that they always tell you to go for it, that's when you got to realize, hey, maybe I'm on the wrong side of this argument.
It was a very oddly coached game by Philadelphia. It was a game that, like, every time they had third down at any meaningful distance, they just ran the ball or they did the safest throw possible. Like, they were not going to take any chances of turning the ball over. They weren't going to take any risk trying to get real yardage in the air. And look, you could argue, hey, okay, we can do that because Green Bay without Kraft is just a disaster offensively. You could argue that. Okay, fair enough. But even when it was 0-0, it felt like Philadelphia that entire game. And it felt like this really all year if you've watched the Eagles. They have no confidence in their offense. And it's very strange. I mean, there's a lot of talent in that offense. And they are horrified to try and do anything. And then in that last spot, you're like, all right, well, this is the most obvious time in the world to be conservative. And then they were super aggressive.
I don't know what to make of the Green Bay Packers. Like, I have absolutely no clue. And maybe that's just how I feel about, I don't know, like 25 teams in the league. But every time I kind of come around to, hey, maybe Green Bay's, you know, the best team in the NFC, they then lose to the Carolina Panthers by 16-13. Whenever I'm like, oh, okay, hey, impressive win. They then lose to the Cleveland Browns, or they give up 40 points to the Dallas Cowboys. Like, this team just hasn't really proven they're consistent really at any point this season.
No, they haven't. I've seen them twice in person. I saw them week two against Washington. They looked incredible. And then I saw them last night, and you watched that game and went, I don't know that this team is capable of playing a playoff game. Now, look, defensively, they've got, you know, got Parsons, and Gary's a great player, and Cooper's a really underrated backer inside. I think the problem for them offensively, especially with Kraft guy, you know, I watched them in training camp. I was out in Green Bay, and I remember thinking to myself, this sucks pre-Parsons. They've got a lot of good players, but I have no idea who the great player on this team is. Like, who is the guy who on third and eight, you're like, that ball's going to that guy right now? And I think that guy kind of developed into Kraft, but then he gets out, you know, or he gets put down for the year with the ACL, and you're looking around going, I have no idea. Like, who is the guy? It's not Dobbs. It's not Watson. It's not Wicks. They're throwing the ball to Bo Melton like crazy last night. Bo Melton was so bad earlier in the year, they made him a cornerback. And now they need him as a receiver again. Like, it's just been – it's one of these teams that, like, if you look at most of those teams, Nancy, I know who your guy is on a big play. I know it is. It's Amon Ross St. Brown. It's J.J. Brown. It's Puka Nacua. You know, whoever. It's Jackson Smith and Jigba. Who is that guy in the Packers? And I just think that kind of explains why this offense, sometimes they just don't know it. They have nobody who really scares you if you're on defense.
Right now, we're talking to Matt Verderam of Sports Illustrated, getting his thoughts about some of the top stories of the National Football League, and then we'll get to the Chiefs and the Broncos. Let's talk about the Buffalo Bills. There's no shame in losing divisional games, right? Everybody's going to lose in your division. But to get beat 36-10 by a Miami Dolphins team that has already fired their general manager, and they are clearly going to fire their head coach at the end of the season. This is a team that is completely playing out the string. Completely playing it out. To look as lifeless as Buffalo did, where you don't score in the first 45 minutes of the game, is truly an embarrassing effort from them.
Yeah, I mean, there may not be shame in losing to divisional opponents. There is shame in losing to Miami. Okay, that is about as bad a loss as you're going to have. And look, you know, this is going to sound like I'm making light of the Bills. I'm taking a jab at them, but I really mean this. I really think part of the problem with the Bills is they really do make the Chiefs like the Super Bowl every year. It's just, it's gotten to a point where the Chiefs beat them every time they play them when it matters. And I do think that part of that Miami loss had something to do with the fact that they just build that game up with the Chiefs. And it's all-encompassing. And I don't just mean the player. I mean the coaches, everybody. It just turns into this, like, massive game. and you win it. And I think nationally, the reaction was like, wow, Bills are back on track. And, you know, I kind of spent the whole week saying, I actually feel the opposite about that. I know the result is bad if you're the Chiefs, it's good if you're the Bills, right? But if you watch that game, I don't think the Bills could have played any better than they did against Kansas City. I don't think it's possible. They didn't have a turnover. They outdid the Chiefs in every statistical category. Allen had as many touchdowns as he had in completions. Kincaid at 100 yards. Cook at 100 yards. The Chiefs played an awful game, and I thought the coaching was one of the worst coaching performances I've seen in the Andy Reid era. They were down 7 points at the ball with 5 minutes left in Buffalo. Like, that game in the past, if all those things had been true, the Bills would have won that game by 20 points. And yet you watch that game, man, the Bills just did everything right, and they're barely winning this game. And so I just think it speaks to a team that they don't have receivers on the outside, and they don't have the vertical threat. And defensively, they're not good. They don't cover particularly well. They're a hot and cold pressure team. They're terrible against the run. I thought they gave you everything they possibly could give you against Kansas City, but against most of these teams, most weeks, the Bills are really, really vulnerable because it's not that good of a roster outside of the quarterback.
I really feel like Buffalo, it's going to be hard to me to see them move forward in their new stadium with the same old formula that they've had. And I hate to be the one like, oh man, you got to fire this guy. But let's say that this Buffalo season goes exactly how you and I think that it's going to go, right? Like, let's just assume that Buffalo wins 11 games, they lose in the second round of the playoffs, and it is the same Buffalo year that we've seen for six straight years. Are they going to go into a $2 billion stadium with the same old, because they're not getting rid of their quarterback? I'm also going to guess they're not getting rid of their general manager. Somebody kind of has to go in that scenario.
I think maybe Jones will be Brady, the OC. Look, the Pegulas who own the Bills, they also own the Sabres in the NHL. And I'm sure many people are probably not all familiar with Buffalo Sabres. Buffalo Sabres are awful. I mean, awful. Every year, they're one of the 3 to 5 worst teams in the league. The Pegulas take forever to do anything with that franchise. Now, I'm a hockey fan. They have been horrific for about 15 years running, and I believe for like 10 years at the same GM. The Pegulas value stability, and they are about as slow to change as it gets. If the Bills didn't make the playoffs somehow, yeah, I think they'd fire McDermott. Maybe if they lost in a wild round. Like if they're the 5 seed, they end up going to Baltimore, and Baltimore just blasts them out of the building, I could see them maybe firing McDermott. But, you know, if it's one of these deals where they're like, you know, a wild card team, and they win a game, and then they lose in the divisionals, I think they probably keep them. But, you know, I also think there is an argument at some point here. The Bills are not getting better. They're getting worse. And Allen, for the way he plays, maybe he ages great. Maybe he's good for another 10 years. Maybe he's got like 3 elite years left in him. Like it's an open question. And you do feel like with the Bills, this team's not winning Super Bowls. They're just not that good. They're fine. They're decent. They're a threat. But like they're not going to – I don't think that team's capable of winning 4 big-time playoff games in January in a row.
Yeah, I don't get that feeling from Buffalo either for just a couple of different reasons, whether it's the defense, whether it's the pieces they put around Josh Allen. I just don't believe it. Let's switch to Chiefs and Broncos. This is where I am in this game. I think that the Chiefs are at a fork in the road, and I think we know what the two forks in the road are. Number one is things can just stay exactly how they are. If the Chiefs go on the road and win this game, they are now 6-4. They're at home against the Colts. We will look at it like the king stay the king, right? The Chiefs are the best team in the AFC. They're rounding into form in the second half of the season. You don't want to play them. If the Chiefs lose this game, there will be a measure of panic that I don't think we've seen in Kansas City in quite some time. And for the first time in really the entire Patrick Mahomes era, they will be discussed like a wild card team. They are not winning the division, in my opinion, if they lose on Sunday. Where are you at as we head into this matchup?
I agree with everything you said. This game for me is for the division. If they win this game, they're still a game and a half behind Denver because Denver still needs to have its bye week. But the Chiefs would be in control because they'd be one back in the loss column and they still play him on Christmas night at Arrowhead on a short week, the Thursday night game. Like, if Denver doesn't beat them in this game, I know they obviously could beat them on Christmas. I have a very hard time believing they're going to win that game. Like, I don't think they're going to go into Kansas City in that spot and win that football game. I don't think any team in the league would. So I don't think Denver's going to do it either.
Right,
I think
now,
the Chiefs win this game, they win the division. But I will say, look, I'll take it a step further. Chiefs lose this game, you're really looking at, like, they might miss the playoffs. Like, they really might not get in. But I think the next 2 weeks of the season, man, like, if they win this game and they beat Indy, I actually think they're going to run the table. Like, I don't think they're going to lose any of those last six games. But they need to play more consistent football. They have looked like the best team in football for a large chunk of the year. They've also played horrendous football at certain points.
That's why, at least for me, Matt, and I completely get why people are going through the schedule. But in my opinion, if you are 5-5 in the middle of November, I don't think I can now rattle off 6 straight or 7 straight wins for you. I'm not saying the Chiefs can't win those games. But if they lose this game, and again, at some point, we got to kind of talk about you are what your record says you are. If we're heading into week 11 and you're a 500 football team, I think we got to kind of start talking about you like you're a 500 football team.
It's fair. And that's why, to me, this game is so defining. Like, the Bills game was extremely disappointing from a Chiefs perspective. But I kind of walked away from that game saying, I don't think they could play any worse, and they still had a shot to win that game. But at some point here, like, the sand in the hourglass starts becoming a concerning amount of sand. Like, you've got to do something. And that is the one knock on the Chiefs over the last handful of years that's been fair. They just, at times, it's almost like they just don't focus. They're not in it mentally. They're kind of all over the place. There's no excuse against Denver. You know you have to win the division. There's no way around it. You lose this game, not only in the division. You had a bye week. You're getting healthier. You're better. I mean, let's just be – I mean, heck, you probably know this better than me. I believe the last time I checked, they were 3.5-point favorite going to this game. Like, they're the better football team. But are they going to play like it? Or is this going to be one of these games where they're half asleep at the wheel for 2.5 quarters and Bo Nix is cutting them up and they've got to make all these adjustments? The flip side of that is they win this game, they come home and play a Colts team that – look, the Colts could certainly win, but they should still be favorites again. They probably should win. And then for anyone who's not aware, I mean, you look at the last six games of the season. It is not exactly a brutal stretch here. They get a Houston team at home that can't score on a Sunday night. Their three road games are the Cowboys, the Titans, and the Raiders. And the other two home games are Denver on a Sunday or on a Thursday night in a short week, and the Chargers. Like, they should win those games. It doesn't mean they will. I mean, God knows they lost to Jacksonville. They could lose. They should win. But that's going to be a whole lot of, you know, fighting for the sixth seed if they don't win this game in Denver.
Yeah, I'm with you. I guess at least for me, when it comes to this game, and I'm picking the Chiefs to win this game, so I don't want there to be any confusion. But at least for me, what will change my opinion about this, man, the Chiefs have won this game every time with Patrick Mahomes as their starting quarterback. Like, maybe there is an example that I'm just completely forgotten, but I cannot think of a time where we could point to a regular season game that had this level of importance. This is as big of a swing game that you can have in the NFL regular season. It's probably the biggest regular season game they've had since that game late in the year at Los Angeles, where that game was basically for the division. The Chiefs have just answered the call every single time. So I at least got to ask the question, if they can't answer the call with all of the advantages that you just said, bye week, left tackle coming back, if they can't answer the call during that time, I got to wonder if this team has some of that same makeup that the last 6-7 teams have had.
It's a fair point, and I think, you know, I would almost question more of just like an emotional, are they just emotionally done? You know, I mean, at some point, I don't care who you are, how badly you want to win, you just, it takes a ton out of you. I remember years ago hearing Steve Kerr interviewed about when he was on the 90s Bulls, and of course that team won 6 titles in 8 years, 2 three-peats, and he was on the 2nd three-peat team. And he said, you know, everybody always said, oh, if Jordan came back, you guys would have kept going. He's like, we wouldn't have. We were just done. Like, it was so much to win year after year after year. He said, I don't think we would have won this title next year. Like, I just don't think we emotionally could have gotten up for it. You know, I think with the Chiefs, it's an odd thing, right? Like, you look at them and go, yeah, they're probably as good if not better than anybody in the AFC. And if they get to the Super Bowl, God knows they're capable of winning it. But you also look at them and go, yeah, week to week, though, I have no idea what you're going to get. Like, I almost think there's a part of that team that's like, just get to the playoffs. Just get there. If we got to go to Indy, fine. Who cares? But this is a big game. I mean, look, they're not – the AFC's not good. Like, they're not out of it seeding-wise. If they were to beat Denver and Indianapolis, they could make a real run at everything in the conference. But it's a game that they cannot lose. And to your point, haven't normally lost these types of games. This is a game where I would expect them to come out and play laser focused, and their coaches to give them a game plan that is reminiscent of a playoff game. Hey, look, we got to win. We're not holding anything back in this game. And if they don't do that and come up short, there's huge questions to be asked.
Last question here, Matt, and we appreciate your time. Let's say that right now, let's say Drake May is the favorite to win NFL MVP, right? Are you taking Drake May or the field?
The field. Just because I think you would take the field. Look, I think it's May's been awesome. I think it's between three guys. I think it's going to end up being between May, Stafford, and Mahomes. And if the Chiefs end up winning these next couple of games, you look at the back half of that. I mean, Mahomes might go nuclear against some of these teams. The Raiders, the Titans, the Cowboys. They're in prime time against Dallas. They're in prime time against Denver. They're in prime time in the game against Houston. Like, I still think if the Chiefs roll at the end of the year, Mahomes' stats might be so massive that you just go, okay, he's the guy. But right now, I think it's a three-horse race between those three.
That is our guy, Matt Verderam, joining us on the show today. He does fantastic work with Sports Illustrated. Matt, man, always appreciate your time, man. Love talking football with you.
Hey, thanks a lot. Take care.
Absolutely. That is Matt Verderam of Sports Illustrated joining us on the show. I want to read this text message to you guys really quickly, and this is kind of where I am, and obviously, if you guys disagree, text in, call in 913-586-7965. I can only speak for how I am going to handle a Chiefs loss. If the Chiefs lose this game, I am going to talk about the Chiefs differently because I've never seen the Chiefs do this before. So this would be the question I would pose. Someone on the text line says, C-Dot, he's not lying. The Chiefs have had five games or more winning streak the last 5 years. Someone else said, I won't be worried about it. A few years ago, the Chiefs lost to the Raiders on Christmas. They were 9-7. They won out and eventually won the Super Bowl. Obviously, all of those things are true. But at least for me, what I will be dealing with is what you are describing. In every single one of those years, they have been able to check the first box. The first box is win your division, guarantee a home playoff game, regardless of how up and down it has gotten for the Kansas City Chiefs. And they have certainly had up and downs. I don't want to paint it like the last 7-8 years have just been cupcakes and rainbows. The Chiefs have had their struggles, ups and downs. Every football team is going to have them. They have always been able to accomplish goal one. So I think it will be a fair question, Rob, if the Chiefs can't check the box that they always have checked, what other boxes this year will they not be able to check? Winning your division guarantees you make the playoffs. Now, I still think they're going to make the playoffs, but you certainly put yourself in a very different mix if that's the case. And we have never really had to worry about heading into December on whether or not the Chiefs are going to make the playoffs because they've always had the division locked up. They won the division last year by 4 games. We didn't spend any time worrying about if the Chiefs were going to make the playoffs or be right. It has always solely been about what quality, what brand of football they are playing to get themselves to that point, to get themselves to that point to then go check all of the boxes. So that's where I am. So we can say, oh, well, a couple of years ago, they did this a couple of years ago. My counter would be is, well, a couple of years ago, they won their division. They won the division. So they didn't win their division this year. So now I'm supposed to think, well, they're maybe not going to host the AFC Championship game. They're maybe not going to all of these things. Like, so I guess, at least, Rob, that's where I will be if we are, then I would say, spending the final 7 weeks of the season talking about a wild card team and not a division leading team that is clearly a tier one at the top of their division team.
We've talked about this before on the show, but I think those texts highlight this point. I think it was 2023. The 2023 Chiefs broke people's brain in a way because there is this belief that, oh, the Chiefs are on the road twice in the playoffs and they won at Buffalo and at Baltimore. Ho-hum, they can do it whenever. Shrug, so it goes. And yes, what they did in 2023 is beyond impressive to go to Buffalo and Baltimore back-to-back and get two wins and then go on to win the Super Bowl. But that is not the norm. That is one of the more difficult paths the team has had to the Super Bowl, and I would say it is an outlier in how football works. And if you're now saying, and I'm not saying you're saying this, you're on the text line saying, well, they did that, so they lose the Broncos and still don't win the division. Ho-hum, I've seen them on the road in the postseason. They still win the games. What you're talking about is doing something that is very narrowly done in the NFL. Again, it's been done, but very narrowly done. I think if you ask Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, Clark Hunt, Brett Veach, whoever, they would take the path of least resistance. And I think the fact that the last time the Chiefs had the path that had the most resistance, they had no issue, has created this thought in people's brain that, oh, it doesn't matter what the path is, they're the Chiefs. When in reality, football could happen in one of those games. Like, what happened in the Jags game could happen in one of those games, and just you find yourself on the wrong end of the scoreboard. You want to be in a more advantageous position. So I agree with you. I will talk about their 5-5 of not being a playoff team and being in big, big trouble, Arrowhead Invitational dead, the whole thing. But I think there will still be a confidence among fans because what happened in 23, people think, well, they did it once, they can do it again, because why not?
You know what? Coming up on the other side, there's an example that I just thought of that I think you will follow that maybe sums up how I feel about the Chiefs heading into this matchup. I'll tell you what it is next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. Watch the show on YouTube by subscribing to the 965 YouTube channel. The Drive, brought to you by DM Entry Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Entry Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this. 96.5, The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so I want to read this, a couple of these tweets that have come in. So we were just talking to Matt Verderam about the Broncos game coming up, and he was talking about how after the Broncos game, he thinks the Chiefs are going to go on a run. And I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I do think it is, I think it is important to note. I don't know if you can go 5-5 over the first 11 weeks of the season, and then the expectation is you're about to go on a 7-game winning streak. And I understand that the Chiefs have put themselves in a different category, but we don't really think that about any other team in the National Football League. That, again, I understand the Chiefs' brand and what they have built. They deserve a measure of benefit of the doubt that they are going to get based on the overwhelming success that they have had. So a couple people texted in. C-Dot, he's not lying. The Chiefs have had 5 games or more winning streak at least the last 5 years. Someone else said a few years ago, they lost to the Raiders on Christmas. They were 9-7. They won out and won the Super Bowl. And I responded with, but they also won their division in those seasons. So the first box that the Chiefs tell me to check every single year, if we ask Patrick Mahomes tomorrow when he comes on the show, what are your team goals? The number one goal they tell you is win the division because it guarantees you make the playoffs. If they lose on Sunday, I don't think they'll be able to check that box this year. This is the example I'll make, and I hate to make this because it kind of puts down my team, but I think you guys will follow this. So I was at the KU-Missouri basketball game last year. And I remember the last couple of years watching Kansas play Missouri, and it was clear that Kansas was much better than Missouri. Like, this obvious, it was much better. So much to the point. And Rob, remember I told you this story? I was kind of happy at the beginning of the game. And I remember a KU fan turned around, and this was 2 years ago, the last game at Allen Fieldhouse. And a KU fan turned down at me and said, hey, you know, it's a long way to go. And I said, you guys beat us by 40. You're going to win again. Just let me be happy. And everybody started laughing. We were having a good time watching the rest of the game. And I remember last year at the 4-minute mark, I looked at my friend and I said, for the first time, Kansas is not that much better than Missouri. They can beat them. That you want to know how I knew that KU was in trouble last year when I didn't think they were that much better than Missouri. that the gap had been closed so significantly from what we have seen over the last couple of years to them not having that much more talent than Missouri. Look at how the season played itself out. Rob, what seed did KU get in the tournament?
They were a 7 seed.
Was that much better than Missouri?
Actually, it was worse. Missouri was a 6.
They ended up being basically the same team. So sometimes you just know. So I'm looking at it like this. We have gone from the Chiefs in basically 8 months, going from the last time they played the Broncos, they were so far ahead of Denver, in Denver, the last time they were there, they were so far ahead of the Broncos, they didn't need to play the game. Patrick Mahomes didn't need to get on the plane. Kelce didn't need to get on the plane. In just 8 months' time, we have gone from it being a preseason, meaningless football game to being the most important game. Now, I think we know that the gap has closed a little bit, but I guess back to my main point, and the thing I feel the most strongly about is Patrick Mahomes has never lost this game. He is undefeated in these gotta-have-it regular season games. They've never really had a gotta-have-it regular season game against the Bills. It's always been nice to have. They very rarely have, we gotta win these games. For the most part, I would say the Chiefs fans treat the regular season kind of passively. And I understand, hey, we're going to win our division. We're going to win 12, 13 games. I'm not going to overreact to anything that happens because they always figure it out. Well, part of figuring it out is you have had 2 weeks to prepare for this thing. You've had 2 weeks. The Chiefs got the schedule gods helped them in the greatest way, and we didn't even know it. The Chiefs had an extended time coming off of their head coach, who was 22-4 in these scenarios. Almost every single advantage is in Kansas City's favor, other than this game being at Arrowhead. Coming off a bye week, you like your coach better than them. You like your quarterback better than them. You've got more on offense than them. This is an offense and a Broncos offense going up against your defense that has struggled. Almost every single advantage, at least for me, hey, the check engine light will be on if they lose this game to this team, because we've never had a question about them in the division. The same way that we never question if Iowa State or Baylor or one of these teams could end up winning the Big 12. It was always laughable if those teams. And the moment that KU stopped being KU is when we stopped being able to laugh at that. The moment when you could start to envision Texas Tech winning the Big 12 or Houston winning the Big 12 or Arizona winning the Big 12. We now live in a world in which the Chargers and the Broncos can win the AFC West. But all of that can change if they win on Sunday against the Broncos.
I forget who said this. I'm trying to find it on Twitter. I believe it was, I apologize. Someone on Twitter said this, and I think it kind of works in line with your point. The next three games for the Chiefs, and we've talked about them, Matt Verderame talked about them all week. The next three games for the Chiefs are the Chiefs still the Chiefs game? Chiefs still the Chiefs streak. But for the rest of the league, you know how they view this three-game stretch the Chiefs are about to go on? A chance for the league to hit a kill shot. Because for your KU basketball analogy, and I think it's good, not only did Missouri last year feel like, oh, we're equally talented, we can get them this year. You know who else felt that way? The entire Big 12. There was no aura. There was no air of invincibility. It was all gone. Like, when they would go play at Baylor, in the past, it was, oh, man, Kansas in town. You could see there was a little bit of tensity or, like, you know, a little bit of fear in Baylor. That wasn't happening last year's Kansas team. They were going into places as the lesser team. The air of invincibility had fallen off. I look at this three-game stretch by the Chiefs. If you don't, you know, go 3-0, flex your muscle and say, we're the Chiefs still. If you go 1-2 or 2-1, but the one loss is Denver, you know how the league's going to look at you? Like you're a wounded animal. And that air of invincibility, that aura, as the kids are saying, is a little bit gone. So I love your point. And that's why I think November is huge for this Chiefs team. They're 0-1 in November. They lost the first one against Buffalo. Largely haven't been punished for it in the standings. We'll see what happens. But if they finish November 2-2 or worse, the league is going to think, we have them down, let's kill shot them. Or if they go 3-1 and the one loss is Buffalo, they can stand up and look at the league and say, you guys done messed up now, like Billy Madison did, and they can start pelting kids again. This is a chance to get that aura back for the Chiefs. I think that aura disappears if you don't have a good month.
This is why I've been calling it the King Stay the King. That's why I've been calling it that. That's what I think this game is. I think this game is the King Stay the King. Last year, when I realized that Missouri was better than Kansas, there was no reason to fear Kansas anymore. None. And, I mean, I ended up being right. They're 15-14 in their last 29 games. So that aura you just mentioned, it's gone with KU. It's gone. Now, you still got great players and Bill Self, and I don't know why Syracuse doesn't think they couldn't beat Kansas, or Notre Dame think they couldn't beat Kansas, or Missouri when they play them coming up in a couple of weeks at Sprint Center. I don't think that Kansas has that much more talent than Missouri has. I don't think there's that big of a gap between those. That's kind of where – I'm not saying we are there with the Chiefs, but if the Chiefs lose this game with all of the advantages that they have, that will absolutely be the conversation around them heading into the remainder of their season. That I would say, in the same way that fans don't respect when fill-in-the-blank team beats up on these other teams, and the question a lot of times is Team A good or did they get a good schedule? These are the games to me to prove how good of a team you are. Not beating up on the Titans in a couple of weeks. Not beating up on the Raiders at the end of the season and winning those games. I've never questioned the Chiefs' ability to win those games. But you had a big game against the Chargers in your division to kick off the beginning of the season. You came out and sleptwalked through that game against the Los Angeles Chargers and really didn't get going until the end. This is another one of those tests against the Denver Broncos. A lot of time to prepare, a lot of time to get going, clean slate. Let's get ready to go. I know what the standings say, but the Chiefs, I mean, in some ways, you kind of got to look at this like it's 0-0 if you win this game. If you win this game, you're 1-0, and everything is still right there before you. But losing this game is a massive, massive hit. Sometimes I would say, an individual win can mean more than just one win, that not all wins are created equal. To me, this is not a game that – this is not like beating Tennessee in a couple of weeks on the road. No one cares about that. That's not a statement game. That's not telling the rest of the league something. This is communicating to the rest of the league that we are still the best team in the National Football League, and we don't care what flavor of the month team that pops up, they still got to go through us to get to where they want to go.
100%. And I love the analogy Kings say the Kings. I love the analogy of, like, the Chiefs have, because of those first three games mentioned beginning of the season, not felt like the Chiefs. But you're right. Congratulations. You got very lucky. The schedule worked out. You have a chance to re-show the world you're the Chiefs. Like, looking at the schedule, the Chiefs will not regain this aura by beating the Titans. They're not going to do that. They're not going to regain that aura by beating the Texans. Who cares? This is the moment to reestablish. We are that team. We are the bully of the AFC. We are the king of the AFC West. We are a team that every year you pencil us into the Super Bowl until further notice. This year might be that further notice year, especially if you can't win on Sunday. You probably can't win the AFC West. So it's a feeling more than a statistic, but there is a feeling that maybe the Chiefs might be down and the league is going to try to pounce on that feeling.
Someone on the text line asked a question. C-Dot, you had the Denver guy on, and you gave the percentages of what winning the division is based on Sunday's outcome. What is it? I will tell you, the difference in this is if the Chiefs win this game, they will have a 51% chance of winning the AFC West. If the Broncos win this game, they will have a 91% chance of winning the AFC West. Right now, it is a math equation to me when it comes to winning the division, and it is very, very difficult to find the math in all of it if the Chiefs lose this game. You're 5-5, they're 9-2, and there's 7 games left in the season. So, I mean, you got to play nearly perfect down the stretch, and you also have to count on the Broncos slipping and falling down the stretch in order for you to make up the ground that is there. Not impossible, but just... everything has to line up perfectly. Everything doesn't have to line up perfectly if you win this game on Sunday against the Broncos. Keep it right here. We'll get to the top stories of the day in sports. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
This is Wyatt Thompson from K-State, and you're listening to The Drive with C-Dot right here on 96.5 The Fan and the Odyssey app.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike Scott.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Rob, earlier today, you and I put out a poll question. The question was, fill in the blank. Blank needs to step up for the Chiefs in the second half of the season. Now, we've talked a lot about Chris Jones, and we'll get more to that coming up at the top of the hour in the hits. Chris Jones is not the answer for me. I get why he is the answer for a lot of people, but the player that I think can change things the most for the Chiefs in the second half of the season is Charles Omenihu. If you are some of the people, I'm not saying you're right or wrong, if you are someone who believes that Chris Jones' impact and numbers are down because he is being double-teamed or triple-teamed, who are the players that would receive the biggest benefit by the lack of attention that is being shown towards them? I would say that George Karlaftis is doing his job. He has 5 sacks so far this season. Now, maybe the frustration is that George hasn't taken the next step and he's not a 15-sack guy, but George is basically what he's been so far the first 4 years of his career. He looks like he's on pace to have somewhere between 9.5 and 10.5 sacks. He's never had more than 10.5 sacks. Now, I know the expectation was that you get this money and now you turn into a magically different player, but that's not what's happened with him. But he is a solid 24-year-old pass rusher. The person I am most upset with is Charles Omenihu. This season wasn't supposed to play it out this way. If you are playing this thing out, I'm on ESPN right now. If you are playing out the rest of his season based on what he has done so far, his projected totals, he is projected to have 28 tackles and 4 sacks. Come on now. This was their move. When the Chiefs let Tershawn Wharton go, who had a very, very good season, the expectation was that Charles Omenihu and or Mike Dana was going to be there to be able to pick up the slack. I don't think we've talked enough about that when it comes to Wharton, that that's the thing that they missed the most on the other side. That last year, Wharton had 6.5 sacks. That's big. I mean, Tershawn Wharton had more sacks last year than Chris Jones had, who had 5 sacks last year. He was one of their better pass rushers. So when you have all of those guys going, and we saw the impact that Omenihu had on the defense whenever he got back healthy, you had a capable pass rush. But now you take those 6.5 sacks out of the rotation, out of the lineup, and somebody's got to make up for him. Nobody on the defense has made up for it yet. Dana certainly hasn't done that, and Charles Omenihu hasn't done that. So if you were asking me to fill in the blank, who needs to step up for the Chiefs in the second half of the season? My answer will be Charles Omenihu. This is not why they brought him back. And out of all the players that they brought back on those one-year kind of deals, he has been the most disappointing. Hollywood's playing well on a one-year deal. Juju's playing well on a one-year deal. Kareem Hunt's playing well on a one-year deal. A lot of those guys that they brought back to keep continuity, I think, are playing to their expectations. I don't think Omenihu's playing to his expectations right now.
I remember in the offseason we had this conversation on this topic. Hey, who's this year more important for, Charles Omenihu or Isaiah Pacheco? We now know the answer is it was both because they've both let down, fallen short of expectations. But I remember last year there was a belief when Omenihu came back from his injury because he had the injury in the postseason. He came back and, you know, George Karlaftis got better. The pass rush got better. And, oh, man, Charles Omenihu was basically like their trade deadline move. They got Omenihu back. And then to get him to stay with the team in the offseason felt like a real, real win for the Kansas City Chiefs. And it has just not turned out that way. It has been middling is a nice way to say it, but basically nothing from Charles Omenihu. And it was not a day one of free agency deal. It was a Chiefs lied in wait and eventually got their guy. And usually those things work out for Brett Veach. To date, Charles Omenihu is not working out. And again, what I'm saying about Omenihu applies to everyone on the defensive line, basically, but they're going to need more because one of the reasons they lost the Bills, one of the reasons they lost the Jags, like we can point to all the losses. One of the reasons they are losing those games is their pass rush is non-existent unless Spags dials it up with 8 or 9, which just leaves you vulnerable in the back. So Omenihu, Dana, Karlaftis, Jones, like Jerry Tillery. Remember they signed him and people thought, oh, he could be a nice little role player. Does anyone know he exists? They traded for Derek Nnadi. He stinks. Like, they need more from everyone. A minute who's just the name we thought they would be getting more from, and they haven't.
The analogy I'll make for this is, it felt to me like a player that you kept in the transfer portal, and he is coming back for another season. The expectation is, now that you're heading into your junior year, you're ready for it to be your time. We always talk about contract year being undefeated. I mean, Charles Omenihu is 28 years old. Charles Omenihu hasn't gotten that big-time contract yet in the National Football League that we know they can't wait to give you as a pass rusher. Basically, if you want to look at his deal, if you want to add the two-year deal with the one-year deal that they just got, they gave Charles Omenihu 3 years, $23 million, which is nothing for a pass rusher. That if he gave you anything this season at his age and if he stayed healthy, he'd be getting big-time dough. You want to know how I know? Because Tershawn Wharton also signed a three-year deal for $54 million and got $30 million guaranteed. A team gave Tershawn Wharton $30 million guaranteed just by showing you he could get to the quarterback last year and getting 6.5 sacks. No one cared that he played alongside Chris Jones and George Karlaftis. Hey, you've been on a good team. You've shown you can rush the passer. You're going to get paid under 30 years old in free agency. That was supposed to be Charles Omenihu this year. He was supposed to be in line to get 3 years, $45 million, and get $25 million guaranteed. But he is playing like a player that you got for a one-year, $7 million deal and gave him $3 million guaranteed.
So basically you're saying that Charles Omenihu is Flory Badunga, and he returned in the portal more expensive and has not lived up to expectations as of yet. Yeah, you're right. I think I fall into this trap a lot, and fans do too, into this idea of a player who was solid here is returning here. There's going to be a step forward. Charles Omenihu always showed flashes while he was here. He's never had the full season for different reasons, but he showed flashes. And the belief was, we've seen it in pockets. Now, despite the fact he's older, he's going to come back and he's going to show it for a full season. And he hasn't. Not everyone progresses the way, you know, some players do. Some players' growth is stagnant, or some players are just, they don't grow. They are what they are. And I'm starting to think, maybe Charles Omenihu is what he is, because one of the reasons I thought he could take a step forward this year, and I don't want to speak for you, but I think we kind of felt the same, was in those pockets, he was really helpful for the team, and we thought, oh, with a full sustained season, a full offseason, no reason to not be playing a full 17 games, he's going to take these pockets that we've seen of success, and he's going to transfer it into a 17-game full season. He hasn't. And maybe that's just Charles Omenihu is who Charles Omenihu is, and we unfairly thought there was another gear he could go get to.
And I think that is a very fair and reasonable take then. Then I don't know how much improvement you are expecting with the defensive line. Because I would say, at least so far in his career, I'm not saying this is going to be the case when he's 27, 28 years old, but this version of George Karlaftis is not any different than the one they've had the last couple of seasons. He's not any different. He had 8 sacks last year. He has 5 so far this year. He had 10.5 sacks in 2023. If we're looking at it, to use a baseball comparison, he hit 17 home runs, 19 home runs, 18 home runs. That's an 18 home run guy. Maybe one day he'll hit 30 home runs, but that's what he's been so far. But I think if you were pointing to the two guys that are not giving you what they usually do, it's been Charles Omenihu and it's been Chris Jones. Chris Jones has 2 sacks. He's the 5th highest paid defensive lineman in the National Football League. Charles Omenihu, it was contract time. Contract time is supposed to be undefeated. He has two sacks so far this season. So I would say that Karlaftis has been as expected. I would say that Chris Jones and Charles Omenihu have not been as expected, and they highlight some of the bigger problems that the Chiefs have when it comes to their defensive line. Coming up at the top of the hour, I went back and I listened to our last conversation with Mitch Holtis, voice of the Chiefs. I noticed something in that conversation that I want to talk to you guys about, and we'll talk about Chris Jones, that when we asked the question, fill in the blank needs to step up and play better, Chris Jones was by far and away the number one answer. We'll talk about it next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.